call the Special House Committee on Military Veterans Affairs to order. Today's Thursday, March 3rd. We are in the Gruenberg Room in the State Capitol here in Juneau. And present is Representative Klayman, Representative Story, Representative Nelson, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Tuck. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please mute your cell phones. I'd like to thank Lydia Klein with the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and Lori Rowland, who is documenting today's meeting remotely. So please speak into the microphone and state your name and affiliation when we refer to you. We have two items on today's agenda. We'll begin with House Joint Resolution 35, sponsored by Representative Kronk, which is the support of the completion of the Northern Rail Extension, which would connect Delta Junction and Fort Greeley to the Alaska Railroad System. The committee did not receive any amendments to HJR 35. Therefore, I'm opening it up to any questions. Any questions for the resolution sponsor? Seeing none. Yeah, what is the will of the committee? Representative Story.
Chairman Tuck, I move that we report House Joint Resolution 35, Work Order 32-LS1579-B from the committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Hearing any,
I have a quick objection, and
there's an objection, Representative Klayman.
I just want to say that the bill sponsor that he should count himself smart to getting former Representative Tallarico on board, because I'm not sure I'd get there without his support. And with that, I withdraw my objection.
Thank you, Representative Klayman. Any further objections? All right, without objection. House Joint Resolution 35, Work Order 32-LS1579-B. It will be moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next agenda item is confirmation hearings for our appointment of Tyler Harder to the Military Appeals Commission. Tyler Harder was appointed in June of last year. Everybody should have a copy of Mr. Harder's resume and application in their file. He's with us now on a video conference. And so, Mr. Harder, can you hear us all right?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can. Go ahead and state your name and affiliation. And please, if you'd like to start off with an opening statement, feel free.
Thank you, Chairman Tuck. So good afternoon. My name is Tyler Harder, and I've been appointed to the Military Appeals Commission. It's been a number of years since I've had the opportunity to do an opening statement, so bear with me, but I'll keep it brief. I'm currently serving as the Senior Civilian Legal Advisor to the Alaskan Command and Alaska NORAD Region Commander here at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. I've been in this position for about 5 years now. And I won't go through my resume, as that's previously been provided to you. And of course, I'm certainly happy to answer any questions about it. But to quickly summarize, I graduated from law school in Montana. I spent a year as a clerk for the Montana Supreme Court there, and then came on to active duty in the Army Judge Advocate General's Corps in 1991. I've spent 24 years as an Army JAG, beginning in 1991, and my first duty assignment was up at Fort Wainwright, Alaska. I fell in love with this state quite quickly, and I requested to be reassigned up here. Every time they came to another change of duty station, I was fortunate enough to get up here three times. The third and the last time I was reassigned to Alaska was in 2011. And so in 2014, when it came time to move again and transfer me to yet another location, I opted to retire instead so that I could remain here. My military career is heavily focused on military justice and our military criminal process. I spent time both prosecuting and defending. For several years, I was an instructor at the Military Justice, or in the Military Justice Department, at our Army Judge Advocate General School and Legal Center in Charlottesville, Virginia. Of course, later years, I was more in the role as a supervisor and mentor to the younger counsel, but I remained heavily involved in the military justice process right up until the time I retired. I'm also quite familiar with National Guard structure, to include the National Guard Bureau. I worked with a lot of different state National Guards over the years, especially as in my time as a staff judge advocate for Army North down in San Antonio, Texas. Our primary mission there was defense support of civil authorities. So that's where the DOD supports state and local efforts and federal efforts with consequence management of hurricanes, earthquakes, natural disasters, pandemics, of course. And in my current position, I've gotten even more familiar with the Air and Army National Guard, or the Alaska Organized Militia as a whole, as it's officially called. And so I believe my background experience lends for a good fit to serve in the Military Appeals Commission. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. To the chair. You know, I'm going to show my ignorance that I really wouldn't even know what an appeals court was in the civil out here in the public eye. So the appeals court in the military, what is the function there? Can you give me a few instances of things that you may come across while you're there so I understand what you're actually getting yourself into?
Well, so the structure that the state has put together is fairly new, and it was a result of a DOD IG investigation that took place quite a few years ago now, and identified some problems with the Alaska State Guard's military justice system. It was lacking a UCMJ equivalent, a state uniform code of military justice. And as a result of that, one was put together and required an appellate process that be involved too. So the Military Appeals Commission would look at appeals from any Alaska Guard adjudicated courts martial or non-judicial punishment, Article 15s, and things of that nature.
To follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you. To the chair. I was just wondering, in an appeals court, how many appeals actually win when it comes to the military? Do you have any idea? In other words, if I was in the military and I felt like I had to appeal a decision of some sort, what are my odds?
Well, I can't speak for the state of Alaska because I don't think there's any statistics in at this point, it being so new. But I do know that on the active duty side, we have both a military appeals court for each service and then a Army board or an arm, or rather a DOD military appeals court, Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, that looks at those appeals that come from the service courts. And then that can go up to the Supreme Court. And over the years, there have been a few cases that have gone all the way to the Supreme Court. I can't give you off the top of my head the exact number of cases that are overturned or sent back for rehearings. But there is a percentage of it. It varies anywhere from, 3 to 5% some years to as high as 10% in some of the courts. So there is relief granted in a lot of situations. And if nothing else, I think my time in the military, I really believed in our system. I thought our, and I still think our system of military appeals was very just and fair. And my personal opinion, I thought it was a better venue than the civil appeals criminal system.
No follow up.
Yes, Representative Rauscher.
I appreciate the answers. I really do. I'm going to ask one more question so I get a better understanding of what an appeals court may be involved in. So if to challenge in an appeals court, that the one that you're actually being appointed to, does it cost money other than my attorney fees, or is that something where you're going to be hung for the costs of the trial itself should you lose? And I'm just wondering how it works there in the realm of where you're being appointed to.
Yeah, no, good, very good question. The appellate process is free to the individual that's lodging the appeal or challenging the decision at the lower level. That's a process that's made available free of charge to any individual that's involved in it.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate all the answers.
Thank you, Representative Roster, Representative Klayman, and Representative Tarr.
And Mr. Harder, you're still currently working as a legal advisor to the Army, or to, I guess to the Alaskan Command.
Yes, sir. The Alaskan Command is a joint command. It's commanded by a Air Force general officer, but it's a joint command that falls under Northern Command out of Colorado Springs.
And you're a new appointment to this commission. You haven't served on. You're not currently serving on the commission.
That's correct. My understanding, based on information provided to me, is that I'm currently I sit as an alternate to the commission.
And follow. It looks like from your experience, you've got a pretty extensive trial experience in kind of all levels of the military justice system, on the non-guard level, but instead on the regular military level. Is that accurate, or is it more trials and less appeals? Tell me a little bit more about, I mean, have you done both trials and appeals on the military side?
Yes, sir. So obviously, as I indicated, the 24 years active duty, that was mostly trial level. I did spend a couple of tours or one tour individual work where we did deal with appeals a little bit more extensively. Position. So my familiarity with the National Guard and specifically the Alaska Organized Militia is based on my time up here in working with the Guard in various capacities. So I've never done any state trials. I was a member of the Montana Army National Guard for about 4 years and dealt with a little bit of work in that capacity with the Montana Guard, but not with Alaska, no.
And just actually to clarify my own understanding, because you brought up how if you were charged in the Army, you'd have a right to appeal to the Army Appellate Commission or Appellate Court, and if you were dissatisfied with that, you could then further appeal to the Department of Defense, and there'd be a further appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. In the context of this appeals commission in Alaska, if the service member is unhappy with the original decision and then appeals that to the commission, is it your understanding they have a further right to appeal from the commission? And if so, what's their next appeal, if any?
And so, I will upfront state I'm not 100% sure. I believe that I read this some time ago. But I believe there is a continual process. I do know that, and it goes from the Military Appeals Commission. It would go, it could go up to the state courts. Okay. So ultimately, the Alaska State Supreme Court could hear some of these issues if they were issues that warranted that kind of level of hearing.
Okay, thank you, Representative.
I just want to thank him. He's done a lot of years of service and a lot of locations, and I just want to thank him for his service and glad you're back in Alaska.
Thank you.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Harder, for joining us this afternoon. And very impressive resume, of course, seemed very qualified for the position. If I'm remembering correctly, this commission was recently created through an executive order by the governor, if I'm getting that right. And so I'm thinking with last year's hearings, you know, there the work hadn't really commenced because it had been recently created. And if you've been serving as the alternate, I wondered if you could just give us a little bit of a snapshot of what's happened in the last year as the commission's got up and functioning and sort of, you know, the role it's filling.
And unfortunately, I have not had any direct involvement with the Military Appeals Commission this past year. I have not, you know, other than just some email contact in terms of introductions. That's been the extent of it to this point.
Follow up.
I guess it's safe to say, though, you probably believe in the mission or need for it, given, you know, your interest in serving on it. And so I guess then could you just share a little bit of that perspective?
Absolutely. And thanks for that question. You know, I guess what it boils down to is the older I get, the more of a sense of obligation I have to give back, you know, share in some way experiences and contribute where I can, you know, perhaps make a positive difference in some small way. But I do know that, you know, even over the years, nothing kept me up at night more than a sense of injustice, a sense of something not being done fairly and correctly in the way it should be done. And it didn't matter if you were defending a soldier that, you know, was facing criminal charges, or you were prosecuting a soldier for, you know, helping the victims of that crime. A sense of justice. And I think the biggest underlying current to justice is corruption. We live in a country and a state that is very much aware of that and very much sensitive to rooting out and getting rid of corruption and maintaining systems that are fair and just. So it's just an overriding sense of wanting to do things right and make sure things are done right.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you. And look forward to just even learning a little bit more. And apologies, I didn't have quite time to like do as much research as I would have liked to in advance of this meeting. But appreciate your willingness to serve and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair to Mr. Harder. I appreciate all your different assignments throughout the years. You know, being a JAG is definitely a job that is excruciating at some times. And then I also wanted to commend you for your support of the JROTC program, especially at Bartlett High School in my district. And talking with some other people connected with your previous assignments and even one of my staff members who's a neighbor of yours, they talk very highly of you. So I'm glad to support you in this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. I was just wondering, and it sort of might be what you were talking about with Representative Tarr, but I was, of all your experience, I was going to ask what you felt most qualified you for this position.
That's a great question. I don't think I would point to anything, any individual single thing. I think we're all individuals. You know, we're products of our environment and our experiences. And I think you know, holistically, who I am today and what I believe and what I think is, you know, can't be narrowed down to one specific experience. So I don't think I can point to any individual experience. I can tell you, though, that over the years, there have been individual specific cases that have left impressions on me, some positive, some negative, in terms of how they were handled or the outcome of them or, you know, even things as simple as a family member leaving you a note thanking you for your hard work. And that's probably ultimately what it boils down to for me is that, you know, you get paid to do what you do. This is a volunteer position, of course, but it's not the paycheck. It's not the reason why I go to work every day. It's because the relationships and the people that I can help along the way, and maybe there's some small sense of gratitude that comes back to me that continues to fuel me. I know that sounds a little bit cliche-ish, but that's exactly why when I retired, the opportunity to teach at Bartlett High School came up, and it wasn't my cup of tea, if you will. You know, I've got five kids, and all of them have been in that 13 to 17 year range, and I'll tell you, the light bulb's not always on, and they're not always hearing what you're saying, but I took that job because it was an opportunity to maybe help steer one or two students in the right direction, and the thank you notes and cards I got from my kids meant more to me than probably than any of the time I spent on active duty and the various letters or accolades I got from general officers. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have just a couple of questions. Mr. Harder, you have some interesting topics for your publications. The Every Child Left Behind on the addressing one important effect on multiple deployments. Can you share some of the possible solutions to that may have been in your conclusion or not, but if you've thought about it, you know, what some of the conclusions, how we can help those families with multiple deployments?
But knowing the opportunity to speak on that was around the corner here, I certainly would have prepared something more elaborate than what I'm about to say, but it's been a few years since I've seen any of that. I do know that when I wrote that thesis paper as part of my master's degree at the Army War College, of course, being a JAG and being you know, a legal background, everybody, predecessors of mine that had been to the War College, mostly wrote on legal topics. I wanted to write on something that I was passionate about, something that meant something to me, and something you know, turned out it wasn't even related to the law, really. So, like I said, I had five kids. The toughest part of deploying was leaving my family behind. You know, the being in harm's way was irrelevant in terms of what you wrestled with emotionally. And my kids were pretty young when I deployed out of Fort Bragg. They were not really, they didn't understand what it was all about. And I remember FaceTiming. It was very glitchy, and it wasn't really a clear picture, but I was FaceTiming with my wife, and I could see my three-year-old running in the background and pointing to the sky and yelling, "Daddy." And I had only been deployed for about a month at that point in time. And I asked my wife to clarify if that's what she was saying. And she said, "Yeah, she's pointing at a plane. She thinks you're on the plane." And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, she's 17 now. She's there at Eagle River High School, and she doesn't even remember it. But it's one of those things where you realize that the time with your family is probably more important than any time it is more important than any time you spend at work. And we talk about a quality of life and a balancing, and yet I don't think we do as much as we could when it comes to following up with that. You know, I know the rotations in the military, the op tempo was pretty high. It's slowed down a little bit now. And there were a lot of families that were broken. Marriages fell apart. Kids had disciplinary problems. And we tried. I think the DOD writ large tried, but I think we kind of failed some of our families and children.
Thank you very much for sharing. I see a few other ones that you have written. And it seems like it's, the developments in sentencing, tying up loose ends. You have one, the fine-tuning continues, but can the overhaul be far behind on developments in sentencing? What kind of direction did you see sentencing going, and where would you like to see it go?
Well, with regard to sentencing, I think the biggest thing that I saw with the military, that the system, the military justice system, that impressed me was the latitude that the judges were given with sentencing. I'm not a proponent of sentencing guidelines. I think that the judges should be empowered to look at the situation on a case by case basis and not cookie cut sentences to criminal acts. And aggravation and mitigation, the two factors that you consider in sentencing to determine what an appropriate sentence might be, should be weighed independently. There's reasons why people do certain things. And sometimes those reasons, I think, are valid and should carry some weight. And other times, people are sorry that they got caught because they got caught, not because they did what they did. And I think that should be part of the system, where individuals are treated as individuals and we don't just apply these blanket sentences.
Thank you, Mr. Harder. Any further questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since you asked about your thesis project, I'm just curious what your analysis provided for in terms of recommendations. I should put this in context. I've been teaching at the University of Alaska Anchorage since 1999 and have had hundreds of students who are military dependents or in military families, and have been surprised by how many multiple deployments there have been, and have seen firsthand the real impact and stress and all of the sort of isolation and just difficulty that could present for the folks at home and the kids. So I'm just curious, for my own personal learning too, just what you came up with out of your research.
Well, one of the things that I think I felt pretty strongly about was the rotation system. There were some folks that were on back-to-back deployments, and not of their own choosing, and had, been downrange 3 and 4 times and were getting hit again. And it seemed like there was a lot of rhetoric given to supporting families. But when the time actually came for somebody to submit a request for a waiver or some sort of exception to not going, as often is the case, the needs of the military outweighed the needs of the family. And I think without having read or looked at that paper in probably 15 years, I think that one of the things I felt or wrote about in there was the fact that we should do a little bit better job of looking at the individuals that make up the units rather than just looking at the unit. So the 101st Airborne Division could deploy. Well, the next time around it could be the 10th Mountain Division or the 82nd, right? But it might be that the same staff sergeant that was at Fort Campbell is now at Fort Drum or Fort Bragg and going downrange again. And the assignments process a lot of times wasn't synchronized with the deployment process, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
And well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know that's not directly related to serving on this particular commission, but in our committee here, we've heard several pieces of legislation related to supporting military families, school enrollment. Most recently, we just had a bill about referrals for child abuse and child abuse prevention for military families. So I just appreciated that you'd share a little bit of what you learned through that. Thank you.
Our children are our greatest resource.
Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments? Okay, I'm going to just take a quick at ease. I'm going to go ahead and open up for public testimony. Public testimony is opened. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? Hearing and seeing none, is there anybody online that would like to testify? Hearing and seeing none, public testimony is closed. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee to the Military Appeals Commission and recommends that Tyler Harder's name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the appointment during the joint session for the purposes of confirmation.
I hear and see no objection. That concludes our agenda for today. Please note that the next committee meeting, there will be no committee meeting next week. Just letting you guys know. Our next meeting will be 1 p.m. on Tuesday, March 15th. At that time, the committee will consider Representative Nelson's House Joint Resolution 32, encouraging the United States Congress to establish hiring goals for apprentices and veteran apprentices. If there's no further business to come before the House Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, we are adjourned at 1:36.